current saturation is a byproduct of voltage throughput, better known as voltage drop. So current saturation is not a cause, it's an effect. But only when we have a condition called voltage drop, and voltage drop is dependent on something else. It's dependent on current having the same polarity as voltage. So if you've got a high pressure node and a low pressure node, the high pressure node is going to send current to the low pressure node to equalize the two nodes so that they end up acquiring the same voltage. And that's in a simple DC circuit, you know, like a flashlight circuit powered by a battery, to keep things simple, to keep the analogy simple, the description. Now, that's because current has the same polarity as voltage, so everything is simple, and we do a voltage analysis, and then we say that the voltage pushes the current. But that's not true if we have negative resistance and the current goes in reverse direction to the voltage. Now, whatever component possesses that negative resistance becomes a generator. And it has a generator without regulation. That's the significant difference to a voltage source. A voltage source is set up to provide a regulated voltage. Now, a battery, unfortunately, as it becomes depleted, its voltage drops. And so it's not, it's kind of like a voltage, you know, at any moment in time, it is a regulated source of voltage. But unfortunately, as time goes by, the voltage drops on that battery, and so it doesn't perform, it doesn't render or give the same voltage that it gave in prior moments of time. But in any case, when you have a component in the circuit that has reverse polarity of current, now that component becomes a generator, but it has no regulation of voltage whatsoever. In fact, it is the opposite. It amasses a greater and greater difference of voltage between its two terminals, causing the current to accelerate even more than before to infinite oblivion. I've seen this happen in an LTSPICE simulation, the simplest example possible, in which you have a capacitor and a battery and a negative resistor. And it's uncanny, but the current goes in reverse. I think it's in the resistor due to the presence of the capacitor, actually. The capacitor does a very uncanny thing. And I think it's because it's a DC system, and so instead of the capacitor getting charged, the capacitor is constantly discharging. Even where did it get the voltage to discharge, right? But it doesn't matter. The question is the wrong question to say where did it get the voltage to constantly discharge itself with greater and greater quantities of current. That's the wrong question. Because of the reversal of polarity of current, it's going to continue to do that. And so what we have to say under that circumstance is that voltage is not pushing the current, it's pulling the current. In other words, the voltage, the area of high pressure is pulling the current towards itself to cause itself to become even more higher voltage. And the other end of the current line, where it's coming from, is a low pressure area. It becomes even lower in pressure until it reaches zero. And yet the current still keeps coming. From where? See, the whole analogy breaks down. It doesn't come from anywhere. Because it's just that it's a movement. But what is it a movement of? It can't be electrons, right? If the voltage is zero at the starting point of the line of current, then where is the voltage coming from that's running the current? You see, this is how the whole thing breaks down and doesn't make any sense. Now, nobody takes this seriously for some reason. I don't know why they don't, because it truly upsets theory. And I think it's because they're so brainwashed into conditioned thinking. You know, and I guess this is why I excel at this as opposed to other people, because I have a background of meditation in my history. And as a yogi, that means I have a habit of breaking the habit patterns of conditioned mind. You know, Charlie Lutz used to warn us about a conditioned mind. It's a hazard. We all want to be comfortable and follow our habit patterns in order to create a condition of comfort so that we're happy and comfortable and we don't feel any unease or tension resulting from too much change. Yet, we don't grow. We're in this state of limbo, and we just, like a jellyfish, we just float around, and we don't grow, we don't change. And transcending our conditioned reflexes of mental habit patterns is a very crucial component of our growth and evolution as a human being. And I see this is the problem in electrical engineering, or just thinking about electricity among the common person, what we're brainwashed to believe, is this comfortable zone of believing that nothing changes and everything's going to remain the same, basically. Because the consequence of taking electrodynamics fully seriously, not just partially seriously, because we're goofing off in the rest of the part the way we think about it. You wouldn't want to put a common person in charge of the electric utility grid because they're so misinformed, it's pathetic. It would be disaster if they took charge of the electric utility grid. And meanwhile, the people in charge of the electric utility grid don't fully inform us about how they go about their operation. It's like some kind of secret cabal, you know? They don't want to share it with anybody. But this is the ridiculousness of a... And then we let physics run in and fill the void of doing what the electrical engineer at the top of the echelon of society of electrical engineers fails to inform us. The physicist goes in and takes his place and fills us with fantasies and fairy tales. It's like Disney World, Disneyland, you know? It's amazing what we are able to get away with lying to ourselves about such fantasies. It's truly remarkable. Well, so I'm no longer enamored of this concept of current saturation. But there is one feature to it that really taught me something important, and that is the triangular waveform is an indication of a lack of saturation of current. And what that means is, consequentially, when dealing with a negative resistance, a component that exhibits negative resistance, is that we've got this condition in which we're feeding a circuit, let's say a sine wave, which is a condition of saturation. Yet, despite that, riding piggyback on top of that is this ever-growing amplitude of triangle waves. And they grow more and more, and they end up dwarfing the sine wave. And it's still there, but we don't see it anymore because it's so dwarfed by comparison to the mammoth, gargantuan triangle wave that is riding on top of it. And so it's dependent on the sine wave, but it supersedes it in terms of its amplitude. And that condition of that growing triangle wave made me wonder, well, why would it grow? What would be the condition to allow it to grow? And so from its perspective, whatever's causing that triangle wave to occur, that component or assemblage of components, their perspective is that the satisfaction that comes of current saturation is growing less and less and less. And that's why the amplitude of the triangle waves grow more and more and more, and they accelerate. They don't grow at a specific rate. They grow at an exponential rate. And so that means that the dissatisfaction, the hunger of a lack of saturation of current is growing by leaps and bounds. And the only driving mechanism I can think of that would cause that to occur would be the voltage difference between two terminals getting greater and greater as a consequence to the reversal of current, the polarity of current being reversed to the polarity of voltage. So saturation, or its ever-growing lack, I should say, the opposite of saturation current, the hunger, the dissatisfaction, the non-saturation current value keeps growing because the voltage difference keeps growing because of the reversal polarity of current reversed relative to voltage. So it starts making sense. Now, why it's a triangle wave, I don't know. We are told that it's a condition of back EMF, and that when the current of the inductor becomes saturated, We no longer get triangle waves, we no longer get back EMF, and now we got ourselves a sine wave. So I'm guessing that's the triangle wave is the repercussion of back EMF. It's this kind of like a rubber band being snapped, you know, and it creates this sudden jolt, and that must be why it's a triangle wave. Because if you compress a triangle wave, it no longer looks like a triangle wave, it looks like a spike. And the only reason why it's regulated, see, now that's the other thing, it's not a haphazard spike. It's a very regular triangle wave. I think I may have seen a sawtooth, you know, it like it leans one way, but most of the time it does not. And that's only because of the irregularity of the amplitude of the triangle wave causes it to make it look like it might be sawtooth, because of the angles are different, because the amplitudes are different. And the timing too. Yeah, that's the other thing. The timing on the triangle wave also can vary. So yeah, then it begins to look like a sawtooth, but a very irregular one that does its own dance to its own tune. Anyway, it was just some thoughts that hit me. I was just trying to think this through. You know, what's the cause of the saturation? What motivates a lack of saturation current to continue to be not saturated despite the growth of the amplitude of the triangle waves that are indicative of this lack of saturation current? And then I realized it's the voltage difference is growing, and that's why everything keeps escalating. So something imposes the reversal of the polarity of current, and so long as that's maintained, then the whole thing turns into a free energy nightmare, because it's an explosive nightmare of free energy. It's not regulated. It's just running amok, you know, just from this simplistic view. Now, if regulation is put into place, then it usually takes the format of periodic collapse. In other words, once in a while, for just an instant, the current is doubly reversed back to its normal polarity in similitude with the polarity of voltage, so that the growth quickly collapses, but it doesn't, that momentary double reversal doesn't happen for very long, or else it would go back to zero. So instead, what it's only very, like, it just long enough for the voltage difference to re-equalize itself for maybe 3/4 of the way, and still have enough voltage difference left over so that you don't have to warm up from zero, from a cold start anymore. And that's what I'm describing. It comes about from a particular circuit that I, for lack of a better word, I have to make up a title for it. It has to do with the three unique mutual inductances of ferromagnetism, diamagnetism, and paramagnetism, exhibited best by iron, copper, and aluminum. In other words, Tesla's trimetal generator. Which is an outgrowth of the features of the golden ratio, but is not an outgrowth of the golden ratio itself. So the golden ratio, once it's created, let's say in geometry, you know, like a golden rectangle, once it's created, it has certain properties. And it's those properties that generates the trimetal condition of three mutual inductances among the three types of magnetisms. And it's that threesome set of coils of self-inductances that creates a regulatable, non-saturable current, which grows towards infinite oblivion, but then is curtailed in a very periodic manner, so it never destroys the circuit. If the circuit is built, you know, to handle the peaks of voltage rise and current rise, then it's able to handle it, and it just goes on pulsing these pulses of energy. And the pulses can be any frequency you want. The frequency of the triangle waves underneath that, and the frequency of the sine waves underneath the triangle waves, those are three different sets of frequencies. You know, the frequency of the pulse is is one frequency. The frequency of the triangle waves is probably the highest frequency. And My guess, from what my memory serves me, the frequency of the sine wave is the highest, actually. No, it's not. The triangle waves are slightly higher than the sine waves, and then the pulses are the lowest of the three different layers of frequencies. So it's a slight complex of frequencies and waveforms, but it's taken me five years to appreciate and clarify in my mind what's going on, you know, because I'm not adept at Fourier transfer analysis or blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm not a electrical engineer, so I just kind of bumble and fumble my way through this, but very gradually, I knew this would happen. It was just a matter of time. I'd create the condition, you know, the free energy circuit, and that was the easy part. The hard part was trying to understand it, and I knew it would just take time, and it would just be a matter of time, and that's exactly what has been happening. It's, you know, my mind is gelling over what I've seen in the virtual oscilloscope tracings of the simulation. It begins to make sense. My brain starts to, you know, kind of work it all out somewhere back in my subconscious, probably. It's busy doing the simulation analysis. And very gradually, my conscious intellect gets dragged along, you know, for the ride. Oh, no. Kicking and screaming. Because it's truly a horrific world, you know. If you really wanted to shock the public, you know, it would be give them the truth from an authority figure, you know, and their minds would reel. It would be a nightmare for them. I can see, because, you know, they're being appeased for a reason, is to keep them from becoming like the nature of electrodynamics, which is a wild stallion. You know, that's its nature. You know, if you ever watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the parts 1 and 2, in particular, you know, part 2, you know, they take death takes them on an odyssey, on a journey through Hades, through death. I mean, well, it's not. No, actually, they only go through Hades in the second episode. No, through the first episode. But they're in the underworld. They're in death. They've died. They actually have died. And eventually they're brought back to life. But until that happens, they're actually interacting with death in a very jovial manner, as if, he, you know, he's a neighbor down the street, another neighbor kid, you know, and they're just playing with him, you know. They literally are playing games with him and winning. He's going, shit, you know. Oh, it's such a funny movie. But I love it because they're really deep, because they call them, they're a band, a wannabe band. They can't play a tune. And they like to think of them, they like to call themselves the Wild Stallions. And it's so perfect for electrodynamics, because that's exactly, you know, it's mind-blowing to really think of electrodynamics in its truer sense, because it's every component of the circuit takes charge and decides what to do based on how we arrange those components. It like gives them different sets of instructions based on how we arrange them. So that they say, oh, we're going to be doing this now. We're going to be creating negative resistance. Oh, okay. And now we get to really dance and play and have some fun and do what we want when we want to do it without warning or telling anybody ahead of time what we're going to be doing. You know, I mean, the circuit does exhibit a certain repetition, you know, every time you run it, but not really. A lot of times I find microcap does not give the same result. And a year later, it doesn't give the same result. So there is a certain indecision or lack of cohesion for its decision-making process. And people don't like that. And they say, oh, it's a problem of the simulator. You know, you've broken the simulator and we can't take it seriously. No, that's the way electrodynamics operates. There's a certain, you know, all we have to do is look at a spark gap. Yet nobody thinks to, everybody wants to ignore that and think that, oh, that's just, you know, that's like an oddity. No, it's not. That is the norm for electrodynamics, is the spark gap. The normal behavior is random, wild, unpredictable, do as it pleases without warning. And that's what we've done, is we've straitjacketed electrodynamics to the point that we find it comfortable that the way we've straitjacketed to think about it that way. And then we go and reinforce that notion by using this silly notion of conservation of energy as if it's the cause, when in fact it's the result of that straitjacketing. And also, in addition to the whitewashing, the creating a sea of ignorance over what is a slightly complicated affair, we've whitewashed it into utter simplicity, overly simplistic models that are not valid. They're not real. They're not true. They're not accurate. Yet we get away with it because the public doesn't demand any differently, because the public doesn't know any better, because they're kept not knowing any better. So that's the situation, unfortunately.